I'm Dave Knutson with Village Philosopher, and we have four people as resource people tonight. On my left, Erling and Marge Wold, and then Ricky and Dale Jampgar. Our topic is women and men bridging the gap. What we'd like to do is to have each of the four up here say something about their own experience with this. In the age in which women have gone through all kinds of changes and many issues have been raised as to their status in the home and in society. We'd like them to say something about that and their experience with this. We're going to let the wives speak first and then have the husbands respond to that. We want this not to take up too much time, possibly 15 to 20 minutes or so, because we'd like, secondly, to break down into some smaller discussion groups of about four people each, and they'll go for about 15 minutes there. And in that case, we want at least one man in every group. We're trying to, you see, overcome the bifurcation that oftentimes happens in the discussions of women's issues. It's already happened tonight because there are only about a quarter of us here that are men. Should be at least half, because that's approximately the statistics of male and female, approximately. And then after the small group discussion, we'll come back to a plenary session. So that's our format for tonight. We have to do all this by 10 o'clock, so we'll try to move along fairly quickly. Okay, Marge or Ricky, would you like to start us off?
All right, when we start talking about bridging the gap, a lot of it has to do with how we deal with roles. Dale and I have been married for 24 years, moving on toward 25, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. Part of it in terms of dealing with roles and who I am, who he is, has been kind of a continuing conversation. We were married after I had been out of college and had been working for a while, been making my own decisions. So even though at that time many people were getting married right out of college and moving right into the full-time role for women of housewife and mother, in some sense moving from kind of father's protection to husband's protection, I did not have that experience. And I remember well, I told Marge about this one. Before we were married, Dale and I had driven up to Minneapolis to see his brother at Christmas time, and Dale had confided to Ron that this was pretty serious. And Ron proceeded to give him some brotherly advice, about who should wear the pants in the family. And on our way, as we drove back, I can still see it now, driving along the Mississippi River, on our way heading back to Wisconsin and to Milwaukee, where we were both working, Dale proceeded to tell me about that. And I proceeded to get my hackles up in the sense that I had been on my own for about 4 years, making my own decision, writing my own checks, and there was no way, and I know this was the phrase I used, there was no way I was going to give up my sovereignty. And I believe Dale got my ring within 2 days, but it was 2 months before we kind of worked that thing through. It was more a question of the assumption that bothered me. The assumption that because I am a man, therefore I will make decisions. And I had some real trouble with that. There were areas where I had more expertise, more knowledge, and my assumption was, those would be areas where my expertise would be valued. And so we worked that through, and we have done that consistently. So there's been a lot of conversation. When Dale went into the parish, I'm aware that I bought the whole bag. I just slipped all the way back all my fighting and sovereignty issues and all that sort of stuff, just went out the window, and I was going to be the perfect mother and perfect pastor's wife and all that sort of stuff. And it wasn't until a few years later that I realized nobody had laid that on me. Dale hadn't laid that on me. The congregation didn't lay that on me, that I had to attend all the meetings, that I had to, do everything that, quote, the perfect pastor's wife had to do. That was something that I put on myself. And I think that that has been my struggle. Hey, what is it that I am buying that somebody's giving, that what am I putting on myself more than what are other people, men in quotes, society in quotes, laying on me? And I believe that I'm not an angry woman, because I believe that in the past women have had the role that they have had to a great extent because it's been beneficial for them. And so we have colluded in the kind of society we've had. I think as there are, maybe because there are people who have been angry, there have been new options that many women have become aware of. And I see those options as beneficial for women, but also beneficial for men. And I guess that's the avenue that I would like to look at. As we talk about the changing roles, as we talk about women in society today, the new options for women, I believe that there are real benefits for men as well. I guess that's...
Well, it's hard to know where to begin. It occurs to me that we're, in a sense, older than the average, say, person here, especially up in the balcony, and that possibly we ought to have somebody speaking from the younger point of view, because I don't know if young people are going into relationships with a different attitude, a new way of looking at things. But it seems to me that maybe this gets to resolve itself into two different spheres. One is the way we conduct ourselves professionally. You made that distinction. And the way we act when we're in couple relationships. And I recall that even though my father and mother lived in a very traditional role relationship, still, there were 8 children in our family, 4 boys, 4 girls, and no distinction was made in our upbringing. Girls were expected to achieve. Boys were expected to achieve. Boys were expected to do housework to help out in a large family, and girls were expected to do housework, and it was a kind of a non-sexist upbringing. And I think my first understanding of sexism came in my last year in college, when I had, because of a spiritual experience I had in my freshman year at Luther College, I had decided that I wanted to be a Bible teacher. So I took Greek and Bible at college and had a major in Greek. And in my last year, I revealed this desire to a counselor, and he looked shocked and he said, "Hasn't anybody ever told you that women can't teach Bible at Lutheran colleges, because it says that a woman should not teach a man?" And, you know, that really surprised me, because up to this point, grades were given in schools without regard to sex. Girls didn't get better grades because they were girls, or worse grades because they were girls, and boys didn't achieve on any other basis. You all had the same exams and you got the same evaluations. And so it did come to me as kind of a shock that here I couldn't be a Bible teacher, and yet here I reveal that my classmate was Jack Price, who was president of the Missouri Senate up to this time, and Jack and I were the only 2 students in the upper level Greek courses, because not many people took majors in Greek. They just got 1 or 2 years to satisfy the seminary requirement. But so Jack and I, you know, read Euripides and Eumenides together, and Plato and Homer. And then to find out, and also I graduated summa cum laude and he graduated magna cum laude, and to find out that because he was born male, he could go on to the seminary and he could be teach Bible wherever you wanted to, but because I was born female, I couldn't do that. It really aroused a lot of anger in me. But I pushed it down thinking, well, this was sinful rebellion on my part, and God obviously meant it to be that way, or the church wouldn't have decided that this was right. And so I pushed it down, and I looked for other options, and I found that the other option for women in my day was you went to the mission fields. So I volunteered to be a missionary and got called to China to be a missionary. And then that was my first understanding that racism and sexism are very closely related, because I was called as a Bible teacher in China. Now, why could I teach Bible to Chinese men and not to men in the United States? And so those two things really kind of bugged me. And I think I knew Erling 5.5 years before I would finally agree to marry him, because I think some of my resentment against the whole scene for men and women was transferred to him. And I felt that if I said yes to him, it would mean a loss of my identity and a loss of some of that independence that I valued, and that I, you know, could not fulfill my dreams. Well, the World War came along. That's World War II, not one. And they weren't sending single ladies to the Far East, and I never did get to go to China. Erling was going to go to South Africa, but he didn't get to go there either, so we pooled our resources and went to Texas as home. But anyway, that's
real mission field.
Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of the beginning of. But then you get during the childbearing, child rearing years, if you marry. And I think what we have to understand too is that not everybody, every woman marries, so they have a whole different understanding of male-female relationships in the professional world and the workaday world. But during the years of childbearing, child rearing, you get lost in that. And so what I find is that most women who have young children in the home are very conservative and want to maintain the status quo because they have a high investment in the support of a male for themselves and their children during that those child rearing years. Unless, of course, they're divorced, deserted, or their husbands get sick, and then they, you know, they don't have that support. But that makes, then later on as the children leave, the old longings for achievement and professional recognition come back. So I think that maybe it's appropriate that people our age talk about it, because it seems to me that the women who have now the most emotional investment in equality for men and women are women in their middle years. So there are two places where the interest runs very high. One is when women get out of college and suddenly find that the world operates on a different set of criteria for men's achievement and women's achievement. And then later on, in their middle years, past childbearing and child-rearing years. So. Well, those are just some reflections. But through that whole thing, then you have to work out the personal relationships, because you're growing and changing all the time.
Hey, Dale, would you like to respond to that? Okay.
Some of the ways that have occurred to me as I thought about the role shifts. When we were first married and during the early years of our marriage, my wife would ask me to help with the housework. And I really felt like it was her responsibility, and I was helping her with it. My wife is now a realtor and is often busy around mealtimes and on weekends, and she tells me which share I have in the housework. She expects me to take my share of the responsibility, and very reasonably so, because she also has demands on her time. Now, I've accepted that pretty well, except I'm not a good cook. And when I'm expected to make a meal, I struggle at it. I get out the cookbooks and I try to do something, and the kids often react with yuck. And that doesn't do much for my ego. So it I've had some difficulty around, appreciating the shifting roles at that point. After all, since she knows how to cook so well, how come she isn't home here doing it? There's another shift that took place, and that is during the earlier years of our marriage, while I was in the parish, she didn't work outside the home while our children were real young, but as we came out to the West Coast and the children had grown a little older, why, she began thinking about what it was she wanted to do in the way of work. She had been a teacher before, but her work outside the home was something that would happen because she wanted to do it. It wasn't an absolute necessity that I was making enough to support the family. And it would be nice with a little extra income. But the question was more, what would you like to do? Now, I was envious of that in the sense, and I've talked to a lot of other men that have talked about, boy, it'd sure be nice to just sit around wondering what I would like to do if I went out and worked, and to have that kind of approach to working. However, now we have three kids in college, one just finishing up, and the financial demands are such that we need her to work to meet the demands for our family income. And that becomes a different kind of issue. And so it's more, what are you going to do to help supplement the family income? And I would guess this is happening in a lot more families, that families can't make it on one income, that they are needing the wife to work. It's not a question of whether or not she feels like it. Another reaction I've had to the shifting roles and the feelings around this is that, on the one hand, I hear from women a lot of anger about what men have done to them in terms of the roles. And I can understand some of the feelings, like Marge talking about what happened to her, but I bristle a little at being blamed for it all. And kind of a sexism in the other direction. The men are at fault. What I sense is that the shifts are taking place because not only because women want a new role, but because society needs a new role. That as human beings, we have a basic need, and that is the need to be needed. And during the Second World War, we had a point where we said, we need women in the factories. We need women in the work world because of the situation. And that increasingly then, there has been a increasing need for women in the work world and a decreasing need for women at home. That with the technology and the conveniences and all at home, that there is a less demanding role at home, and especially also with the longer life expectancy and the kids leaving home, there's less of a demand for women to be at home. And so because of the need to be needed, I believe that they are wanting to move more into the other kinds of work world, also to have some of the advantages that it has given. Because our society has tended to value the kinds of successes in the work world far more than the successes in the home world. And so if one is really going to feel needed, it is necessitated moving out and having those kinds of successes to feel important or significant in our society. So I think there's a lot of motivations and a lot of reasons why the shift is taking place at this point. And I want to be a part of a growing sense of equality, but also don't want to be the blame for all the problems of the past.
And would I please cook more often?
She heard me.
Yeah, I have a deep sense of remorse, I suppose, and some anger toward my church. Because when I came through the system, I went 7 years beyond college, I never heard a paragraph about marriage, about relationships. And I commend kids today who have a different whole potential of expertise when it comes to human relationships. And I feel betrayed because the church misinterpreted the scripture. I have no question of it. Today we had the same thing again in our Bible study, when he told us how we had been misinformed about what the Hebrew words meant in Genesis 1 and 2. And I suppose something of that kind of bubbles up in me because I was told when I went to SEM, the choice is foist. And I made the church first, and I betrayed my family. I really felt, I remember taking my two older boys out fishing once when I was coerced of it. Tragic. I'm thrilled that our son Steve and his wife Cindy, who are both here, that they have a three-quarter time job each so they can take care of their son and potential child equally. That's, I think, a beautiful thing, because there's total equality in Jesus. Women were much more receptive than the males. They understood Christ and read him very clearly. The men had a hard time even after the resurrection. Acts 1, they were still in a bit of a daze. So I suppose I come with that kind of a disappointment that I was betrayed and that I partially betrayed my own family. My wife made up for most of my inequalities so that our kids didn't do too badly. But that's really something I think that is really deep inside me, and I'm very sorry, because the Bible makes very clear that there's New Testament Gospels of Jesus. He had total receptivity to both groups. And in the age to come, those who are thinking of marriage now, in our area homes cost $135,000-$140,000. There are no couples marrying that are not both working. One out of three women in America are not attached to a male. By death, by divorce, by never being married. Divorce is galore in some areas, 1-to-1. And women are betrayed if they aren't prepared to work in the workforce. And that's why those who are happily married ought to fight like mad for equality in business, in industry, in jobs, in relationships. Because women have to pay just as much for food and clothing and all the rest of it. And oftentimes, since they aren't trained to maintain cars as such so well, it maybe takes a bit more for them to make it. So I think we come back to justice, number one. And the second thing that I think we've forgotten across the years, that nobody ever, no one ever loves you if you don't earn it. You know? A kid doesn't respond to you if you don't win that kid's love. The mate doesn't have to respond to you. They can hate your guts even though they stay with you. You got to win people. And I've told some pre-marrieds they ought to have much more romance after marriage than before. If this person's worthy of your life, you ought to be like Mrs. Ford. She said our marriage is 70-30. We both give 70. And then you hope you hit 50. I think you gotta win your mate, and that's a lifetime endeavor. And if you polish your mate's gifts, the mate becomes so much more attractive, so much more significant. Like, I think Marge is one of the brightest, if not the brightest, women I ever met. You know why? She chose me. My son is laughing the loudest. Did you hear? Stephen means crown.
Well, I think my temptation at this point is to say, let's, you know, here's some questions to our group up here, but that would cut into our discussion time a bit. So I think with that as a kind of leap off point and giving you some ideas, why don't we break down into some small groups of about four each? And as I said before, be sure there's a man in each group.
About a third man.
Okay. Well, that means there might be more than one man in each group then. I would say try to share your experiences in the way in which these people have shared their experiences in the group, so that it becomes as much yours as it has been theirs. And then perhaps another question that you might keep in mind is, what's the unfinished agenda here? I think that experientially speaking, we're all at a lot of different points. Some things are very clear. Certainly the theological point is very clear, or it ought to be. Namely, there are no final distinctions here, that we're talking about persons before God, not male and female in some discriminated or different sense before God. So that the theology is clear. It's not happening that way in the churches oftentimes, because the theology is oftentimes correlate with individual experiences. So if you are a sexist, then you've got a sexist theology that goes along with that. So what are the experiences that you've had, first and secondly? What's the unfinished agenda here? And then I think we can share some of that when we get back together in a whole group. So let's take about 15 minutes to discuss that. Okay. Well, we're wondering whether you got your own problem solved and also that of the wolves and the jet guard. Well, maybe a way to focus the remaining minutes of this discussion would be to ask, what do you think is the most pressing issue in all of this right now? That's kind of the unfinished agenda issue, but if you had to focus it all for yourselves coming out of your conversations, what's the thing that you would focus on the most? What do you think is most urgent for the church and society to accomplish in this matter?
Equal faith.
Equal pay.
Equal jobs.
How do you say the jobs are equal? How do you decide what jobs are equal?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Or comparable.
Are there not some current attempts going on to try to evaluate that? I don't know anything about them. Does somebody know something about that?
Well, yes, there have been several court cases. In California, Pacific Bell Telephone had to pay millions of dollars in back pay because women line dispatchers got one-third
less
pay than men line dispatchers for doing the same work for years, and so they took them to court under the equal opportunity.
They rang their bell.
Ding-a-lings.
Something like that is really obvious.
That's obvious, right?
But how do you get a situation where a secretary says, my work is just as valuable as that service coordinator's job, and in fact, I won't take that service coordinator's job because it's dumb, but my work is just as important, I should be paid just as much. And then, who's really sorry? If she really wants more money, why doesn't she take the service coordinator's job?
That is tough. Margaret Mead says that in every culture that she studied, whatever work men did, it was valued by the society. A male dominated in the world, she felt was valued, and whatever women did wasn't. If women were the gardeners and men were the weavers, then weaving was the status occupation. If men were the farmers and gardeners and women were the weavers, then farming and gardening was the status occupation and got the most rewards in the society. So, yeah, how do you?
I presume usually one way in which, you know, the wages are worked out is in terms of the demand there is for those services. So you have salaries settled by that, but if you get a profession in which women are the predominant contributors to that, such as secretaries, then the question would be whether that settles down at a lower rate than it ordinarily would if there were an equal mix of men and women.
I think it settles there because it's a kind of a secondary labor market. Women are forced into secretary jobs, nursing jobs, and there's more of a demand because there's more women and fewer jobs.
Yeah.
And the price settles at a lower rate.
Yeah.
Now it's changing.
Right.
As women move into those traditionally male jobs, there's going to be more people in that, so the wage will probably go down in all of that, and they'll think they're getting shafted again because they're not getting up to the...
I don't want to speak too much, but it's interesting when you mentioned traditionally male jobs. One of the great things that has contributed to the need for women to find new identity is the fact that in this century, women have lost a lot of traditionally male women's jobs to men instead of the reverse. Women used to be the obstetricians. No child was born in the hospital even 75 years ago. They were all born at home with midwives or female relatives in attendance. And then you had the rise of the specialists, the obstetricians and the gynecologists, who then put created laws and legislation forbidding women to deliver their own babies at home and having midwives. And there are all kinds of battles going on in California now because of that. Women used to be the pediatricians. It was women who decided how children should be reared and taught other women, younger women, about child rearing until male pediatricians took that over. And then, Dr. Spock told all the women how to bring up their kids. Women used to be the brewers and the winemakers in the home. They used to be the people who produced canned goods. They canned their own goods. They raised their gardens. And gradually those were taken over by men and commercialized, and women changed from a producer class in society to a consumer class, and men who then were dominating the commercial output of goods created a consumer market of women, so that now you find women spending 2 and 3 days a week just shopping, looking around, because they've moved from that. So, what you talk about being traditionally male roles really were traditionally female roles taken over by males, and women are just trying to recapture lost arts.
Hey, our group looked at that from a little different standpoint, not so much from the job market, but as much as what's going on in the home. Many couples talk about how men are helping with the housework or women are helping with this or that, but behind a lot of those statements are the fact that that's still the woman's role and that the male is helping the woman with that role or vice versa. And that it may take another generation before we break down that concept of something is the woman's role or it is the man's role, but that it's a humanity role. It's just something that has to be done. And I may be better at it, or Sally may be better at it, but it's not a subtle expectation. So our group didn't feel that we had really, as a society, gotten to that neutral point yet.
I don't imagine that will ever come, like a great curtain coming down and before and after the curtain was the change in the roles. I know in our family, it's certainly been a little bit at a time. I realized that after a while that no words were spoken, but the last one out of bed made the bed. And if I was up first, Dale would make the bed. If he was up first, I'd make the bed. And no, it was a matter of, hey, that was the expedient thing to do. We had other things to, and that's the way it's gone. About everything but cooking.
Now you're both getting up at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that's
keep
the reason.
Getting up earlier and earlier.
We also have to start just utilizing each other's talents, and not saying whether it's male or female, but what are your talents and what are your gifts and your capabilities, and especially in relationships. Balancing it out and finding out who's good at what, and if neither one is good at that, well, we'll both struggle through it kind of thing, but finding out what positions are best to be taken. Like if one's better at keeping accounts or one's better at housekeeping, let that person do it, so that they can be feeling good about themselves and doing what they enjoy doing and are good at doing. And I think that's the thing that we have to build that in both in home and in careers.
And then maybe trade off occasionally, yeah, so that one doesn't become so dependent on the other for those skills.
One thing that this fellow said up here about traditional roles, secretaries or nurses, as though that's a cut below something, I kind of resent that. I'm a nurse, and I'm a real good nurse, and I'm real proud of the way I do my job. And I think that it took me a long time to realize that I should have some status. When I went job hunting in Portland when we moved there, I turned down several jobs because they said, you're not paying me enough. I said, I'm worth more than that. I do a good job as a nurse. And I finally got a doctor who hired me and pays me and treats me as though I am a good worker and appreciates what I do. In fact, last year one day, I went to work and all of a sudden lost my voice. And he's an OBGYN specialist. And I do spend a lot of my days on phone calls talking to these patients who are pregnant or who have problems and so forth, and I imagine probably take 90% of his phone calls for him. And at the end of the day, he said, I didn't know you had to talk to all those people every day. Even though I tell him and I pick him up and I chart everything and what goes on, yet, he said, I just didn't realize you had to cope with all of these things every day. And I think I do a good job. And I think that that's where we shouldn't categorize jobs as being less worthwhile or less worthy of a pay because the secretary too. Our secretary in our office, if she didn't do a bang up job, the office would fall apart, literally.
The point I made was, the point I made was more on what the pay you actually got, not what it really is worth, which in our society is two different things. Anyway.
Well, for the first time, I'm being very, very well paid by a lot of very
good. And but that's the exception of the nursing secretary. They really are unpaid. Yeah.
Would you think it helped to join a union?
Air traffic controllers.
Is equal pay for equal work the only issue?
No, I think it could go beyond economics, personal.
Recognition for a good job done. I think that's just as important.
Well, even the job market I have to look at, we talked here about two people sharing one job, and that's still not tradition. A few companies are offering that, along with other benefits, which have been their child care, not just for the wife to go to work, but for the husband to. Like in Seattle, we're down for a downtown child care center, where he could have lunch with a child. Like all those things that are coming, this whole thing about the job market, which is so traditional, and so high bound that companies just will not move to be innovative.
It's happening in just a few instances.
Just a few instances.
Right now, I think society's going to have a big problem with a lot of older women have spent their entire time staying home and taking care of their family and haven't gone out and gotten any training. Maybe it's their fault, maybe it's just because they were too busy, but then finding themselves in the older years, either divorced or widowed, and not enough income, if any at all, and having to get out to the job market at 50, 55, 60 years of age, and no training, and I mean, they're in poverty if they don't, unless they inherit something from us. So, some of them don't even have social security.
That's right. Yeah.
So the need you're talking about is the need to be able to make it economically. And independently.
Yeah, I'm like, we should stress training of some sort for women.
Almost the risk if a woman stays in the home for 20 years and doesn't develop those skills.
There's a big risk now.
The other side of the issue of that I'm concerned with, that I think is at stake, is the lower valuation of homemaking in our society. But I see that gradually people just have less and less time and energy to focus on taking care of the emotional needs, the social needs, the nurturing needs that we all have, and that there's less attention being given to that. And we may pay a severe price ultimately.
I think the stress there has to be realized too, that that's not just a woman's role. I think there's a lot of men that I've known that would love to stay at home and be, you know, the homemakers. But because of society, they can't. Or not, they can't do it without getting a lot of flack. And saying, well, you're not working, or you're not doing this, you're not doing your job, like that.
You mentioned the word training, and I think maybe formal training to be a homemaker is a lot of experience and training that goes into it. The accounting that you have to do, the balancing of the books, the consumer awareness that you have now to be a good homemaker, that's excellent training to go out into the business world and be an accountant. A consumer specialist.
Try putting on
it's a form that
you can. Exactly. Isn't worth
it. What we keep talking about, we keep talking
about it all the time, is that the whole labor market needs to change. The whole way that the job market works needs to be altered as we move into this new period, because that's holding a lot of people back. You either work 40 hours or you don't work at all. There's no daycare center. My hat's off to the people who are working three-quarter time. I think that's
just
type of job in the future.
It's
going to have to become
that. It just started.
Well, I'm sorry. We've just gotten started, I think, and we're just beginning to really come out with a number of things. But it's 10 o'clock, so we'll have to call it to a close. And